Hello, hello. Thank you for being with us today. I'm excited for today's episode, but wanted to take a quick moment to talk about prenatal vitamins. As a doula, I encourage my clients to achieve optimal nutrition through food. However, even with the most thoughtfully planned diet, it is nearly impossible to meet the daily requirements through food alone. Ideally, you should start taking a prenatal before you find out you're pregnant, or as soon as you test positive. P.S. If this is you, congrats. Prenatal vitamins help nourish and support your body while helping you grow that cute little human inside. Nutrients like choline and folate in prenatal vitamins support healthy brain and spinal cord development in early stages of pregnancies. Prenatal vitamins are unfortunately not all made the same. My favorite prenatal brand is called Needed. I first discovered them through our Facebook community, actually. They are very supportive of our community and have secured 20% off to all of our mamas with code VBAC20. Go to thisisneeded.com and enter in code VBAC, VBAC20 at checkout for 20% off.
Good morning, women of strength. I am really excited to be back here with you. This is Julie, and it is my first official episode back doing regular episodes. Just like we talked about a couple weeks ago, I'm going to be doing, or was it last week? I don't remember what week it is, but we are going to be doing every other episode alternating between me and Megan for the most part. And I'm really excited to be back here. We have a really special guest with us today. But before we get into that, I want to say, I just got back from South Korea 2 weeks ago. No, 2 weeks. Oh my gosh, 2 days ago. If you haven't listened to Paige's episode for her maternal assisted C-section, go back and listen to the episode that launched on December 2nd. I do believe it was maybe episode number 357. And me and Paige are talking and sharing her story. And I am literally so jet lagged right now. It is going to be a morning for me for sure. So if I'm a little clunkier than usual or a little more like my brain doesn't work just right, just be a little bit patient with me, please, because the jet lag is absolutely real. Before we do get started, though, I'm going to introduce our guest. I want to read a review. Megan sent me the review this morning, and I think it's really interesting because she sent me this review. It's a 1-star review, and you might be curious as to why I am choosing to read a 1-star review, but I'll tell you a little bit more afterwards why I picked that. So this one is on Apple Podcasts, and this person said, listened to 10 episodes and found that the stories they choose to share are usually always the same with a twist. Didn't find any episodes that said a C-section saved mine and my baby's life. So lots of bias and fear-mongering from people who are selling female empowerment. Maybe I'm missing the episode where the hosts say sometimes it's okay to have a C-section. With all of these birth stories, you would think I could relate with one, but I find that the antidotes shared in this podcast are a really easy way to avoid talking about women that are actually statistical outliers. And I think that episode is really interesting. First of all, I appreciate everybody's views and perspectives, but also I think that review is a little bit interesting because, well, she said she's listened to 10 episodes. I'm just assuming it's a she. Maybe that's not the right way to do that. But she said that she has only listened to 10 episodes. And it's interesting because I wonder what 10 she picked. Because I feel like, isn't it maybe a sign that all of the stories are similar? Because our healthcare system needs a lot of work. Clearly, if so many women are having trauma and unnecessary C-sections, isn't that a sign that something needs to change? I know that a lot of us have struggled with unnecessary C-sections and really traumatic treatment in the hospital systems. And so, I don't know, I wanted to bring that up because, first of all, we do have many, many episodes where C-sections were necessary. We've talked a lot about that, how C-sections are life-saving procedures when they're necessary. And I feel like we do a pretty good job leaving space for all of the stories. But let me know what you think. Go to the Instagram post today about this episode and let me know what do you think. Do you think we do a pretty good job? Do you think we need to have a little bit more talking about C-sections that are actually necessary and life-saving? Do you feel like it's unequally represented? Let me know. Like, I want to start a discussion about this. So go ahead and leave a comment. Let's talk about it, but I do know that me and Megan have been very intentional with sharing a wide variety of stories and outcomes and necessary and unnecessary C-section. So hopefully you feel well represented no matter what side of the view you are on.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
So anyways, we are going to go ahead and get started now. Today, I have a really awesome guest. Her name is Gisa, and she lives in Charleston, South Carolina, and she's a mom of two boys. She had a C-section with her first baby, who was the C-section was because of a breech presentation after she tried everything to turn him. Knowing that she absolutely did not want to have a C-section for her second baby, she navigated the difficult search for a truly supportive provider and ended up having a successful HBAC or home birth after cesarean after having some challenges to get labor started. So we are super excited to hear her story, and we are going to talk more at the end about how to find the right provider for your birth and your birth after cesarean after she goes ahead and shares her story with us. All right, Gisa, are you there?
I'm here.
Yay, I'm so excited to have you with me today. Thank you so much for joining me and again for being patient with all of my technical issues this morning. But I want to go ahead and like to turn it over to you, and you can go ahead and share your story with us. And yeah, I'm excited to hear it.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here and share my story. Okay, let's start with my first birth, which was my C-section. So everything was going well at the beginning of the pregnancy. I was feeling a little bit nauseous, but overall feeling well. Then at the anatomy scan, I found out that my baby was breech. And I was kind of like, wait, what does that mean? What does that mean for birth? Like, what's going on with that? And we had so much time left, and the provider was not worried at all. It was around 20 weeks, so we thought we had plenty of time at that point. Babies are little, they flip-flop around. I was not concerned at all. As time progressed, he continued to stay breech, so he did not flip on his own. And during one of my OB appointments, I was basically told, well, if your baby does not turn head down, we're just going to have a C-section. So there were really no other options given. At that point, I was actually planning a natural birth at a hospital. So that was not really what I had in mind. We had also taken a hypnobirthing class, which was awesome. We learned so much about birth and pregnancy that I had no idea about. So hearing that I was going to need a C-section if he wasn't going to turn head down was really not what I wanted. So I started looking into things I could do to help him turn. I started doing spinning babies exercises. I started seeing a chiropractor. I did acupuncture. I even did moxibustion at some point, which is really fun. It was like a Chinese herb that you burn by your toe, and that's supposed to create fetal movement and help the baby flip, which unfortunately did not help. I was out in the pool doing handstands and backflips about every day. I was laying on my ironing board at some point with a bag of frozen peas on my belly. I really tried everything possible to get this baby to flip. Nothing worked. And I ended up trying having the ECV at about 37 weeks. That's the version where they try to manually flip the baby from the outside. And she gave it a good try, two attempts, and he would not move. So it was like his head was, it kind of felt like it was stuck under my ribs, and it was very uncomfortable. And yeah, he was very comfortable where he was at. And so they had me schedule the C-section, which I was really unhappy about, but at that point, I didn't really see any other option. So it was about my 37, 38-week appointment, and the OB wanted to talk a little bit more about the details of the C-section, which made me really emotional because that's not what I wanted. And so I started crying during the appointment, and then the nurse comes in and says, "Hey, we actually forgot to check your blood pressure. Let's do that real quick." And I was like, "Well, I'm sure that's gonna be great now that I'm all emotional and crying here." And of course, the blood pressure was higher than it was supposed to be. And the OB started joking about, "Oh, maybe we'll have a baby today. Maybe we're going to just do an emergency C-section," which was not what I wanted to hear at all. It made me even more emotional. And so I remember sitting in the office crying. And now I had this high blood pressure. My husband handed me a magazine of like puppies or kittens and was like, "Hey, sit here. Chill out, just relax, look at the kittens, and they'll retake your blood pressure, and I'm sure it's all going to be fine." And I was just like, "Oh my God, nothing is fine right now." So it ended up coming down a little bit. They still sent me to the hospital for some additional monitoring. It was all good, and we ended up being sent home. But I just felt so unsupported and so unheard in that moment when I was thinking about the C-section. I was even considering at some point what happens if I just don't show up for my C-section appointment and just wait if I, to see if I go into labor. But then I thought maybe an emergency C-section would not be any better than a planned C-section. I had a friend who had an emergency C-section and she said it was like recovery was really difficult. So that's also not really what I wanted. So I went ahead and showed up to the hospital for my scheduled C-section at 39 weeks and one day. But I was so emotional. I was crying on the way to the hospital. I was crying at the hospital. Everybody was really nice at the hospital, but it was just not what I wanted. And the idea of them cutting my body open and removing the baby, it was just so far away from what I had envisioned. The C-section went well. I really did not have any major issues, but recovery was pretty rough. He was pretty big. He was 9.5 pounds and 21 inches long. Recovery was a little rough. He had also a really difficult time with breastfeeding. He had a really weak suck, and I just kept thinking that what if he was just not done cooking? What if they got him too early? He wasn't ready to be born yet. We found out later that he had a tongue and a lip tie that the hospital failed to diagnose, which just made things even more difficult. I overall hated my stay at the hospital. I felt like I was not getting any rest at all the whole time I was there. My son didn't like sleeping in the bassinet because why would he? I feel like there were people coming in all the time and interrupting the little bit of rest that I was trying to get. Checking on me, checking on the baby, taking temperatures, the photographer, the cleaning people. It was just like people were coming and going. The only person who actually did not show up that I was hoping would show up was the lactation consultant. And she did not show up for almost 2 days, which was really, really disappointing. The first few months were pretty hard. I would say they were pretty rough emotionally and physically. And when people asked me about my birth, a lot of times, I got comments like, "Well, at least he's healthy," or, "Oh, your baby's really big, so it was probably good that you had that C-section." And that really upset me because it was just, I understand that it's important for my baby to be healthy. And yes, that is the most important thing. But at the same time, my feelings are valid about it and my emotions. And I felt really robbed of that experience to birth my own child. The fact that I had never felt even a single contraction really was upsetting to me. And I felt that my body had really failed me. So, yeah, I knew that if I ever were to get pregnant again, I would not want to have another C-section.
Taking a quick break to continue our earlier conversation about the importance of the right prenatals for pregnancy and beyond. As I mentioned, my favorite brand is Needed. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally intensive times for a woman's life. You don't have to feel so terribly nauseated or so depleted in the postpartum stage. A prenatal multi that optimally nourishes you can make all the difference between just getting by during and after pregnancy and feeling your very best. Let's not just survive, we definitely need and deserve to thrive. Needed is clinically backed, third-party tested, and formulated the best, in my opinion, prenatal vitamins. They took so much time to learn about women and why we are getting the bare minimum nutrients, and then designed the supplements that addresses women's needs at every stage of pregnancy and beyond. Needed's prenatals are filled with the optimal amount for both you and your baby and include important ingredients such as choline, folate, vitamin D, and more. Enjoy 20% off at thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20. Back to today's episode.
So let's fast forward to my second pregnancy. I got pregnant again when my son was a little over a year and a half. And again, as said, I knew exactly what I didn't want, and that was to have another C-section. So when I found out I was pregnant, I pretty much immediately jumped on like Facebook groups, mom groups, trying to do my research and find a truly VBAC supportive provider. I did call the birth center here in Charleston, and they told me right away, we don't do VBAC. Sorry, you can't come here, which was pretty upsetting because they basically see a VBAC as a, or having had a C-section before, they see your next pregnancy as a high-risk pregnancy, which really does not make a lot of sense because every pregnancy is different. And just because you had a C-section, there can be so many different reasons you should not be considered high risk for your next pregnancy. So I found a provider that I thought was VBAC supportive, and it seemed like that was my only option. So I started seeing her. As I was seeing my OB further into my pregnancy, I started asking some questions about birth, and I really didn't like some of the answers she had for me. So I asked about intermittent monitoring. She said, nope, you can't do that. Hospital policies, you have to have continuous monitoring. I didn't love the idea of being strapped to the bed, and I wanted to move around freely. So that was not going to be an option. I asked about eating, and I got the answer, no, we don't really allow eating while you're in labor. You know, you can have clear fluids. Like, I was just thinking, I don't want to eat ice chips while I'm in labor. If I'm hungry, I want to be able to eat. I asked if I could labor in the bathtub because they did have tubs at the hospital. She said, no, because of the continuous monitoring, you're not going to be able to get in the tub. So hearing all of that made me really uncomfortable. And whenever I did ask questions, it almost felt like she didn't really want to talk about it. Like, she didn't really want to talk about my birth plan, which was really important to me. Now, at the same time, it was also COVID. So I got pregnant with my second literally the week before people started quarantining for COVID. So on top of all of these things that I didn't like about the hospital, there were also the COVID restrictions. So I had to show up to my appointments in a mask, which was totally fine. But the idea of having to labor in a mask made me a little uncomfortable. I was thinking about hiring a doula, and because they were only allowing one support person at the time, that was also not going to be an option. And then I knew my son was not going to be able to see me at the hospital, which is something I was really looking forward to. So I kept thinking, maybe there has to be another option. This can't be my only option here. And I started looking at some places further away, and I was like, maybe I can travel to another place further away. And I was looking into, you know, birth centers around the area, all over South Carolina, really. And at some point, I did come across a website that said they were offering VBAC support. And I didn't really know what that really meant, but I filled in a form and I said, hey, I need some help with a provider. I'm seeing an OB, but I'm not feeling super comfortable. And submitted that form. And then I want to say maybe a couple weeks later, a midwife called me and she was like, hey, I'm not in your area, but I actually know a lot of people all over the state. And let me send an email to my network and we'll see if we can find somebody who can help you. And then one day I got a call from a home birth midwife here local in Charleston. And she was like, hey, I got your message and tell me how can I help you? So we talked a little bit about home birth. And at that point, I was kind of like, do I really want a home birth? It was not something I had really considered. During that hypnobirthing class, when I was pregnant with my first son, We watched a lot of videos of water births and home births, and always thought it was really cool, and I would love to have that experience. But at that moment, when she asked me, "Hey, would you consider a home birth?" I was kind of like, "Ooh, I need to think about that for a second." So I talked about it with my husband. I did a lot of research on home birth. I ended up sending her all my medical records from my first pregnancy, and we continued talking and checking in. At the same time, I also continue to see my OB, and that was really for a variety of reasons. First of all, I had really good health insurance, so all my visits were covered. So any tests, things like the anatomy scan, everything was covered by health insurance, and it was just easy to coordinate those things with my OB. I also wanted to continue my care just in case there was something that would pop up that would prevent me from having a home birth and those plans would fall through. I'm a big planner, so I like having not just a plan, but also a plan B and a plan C. I also like that established relationship just in case I needed a home birth transfer to the hospital. I've heard stories of where moms were treated very differently when they arrived at a hospital with a home birth transfer. And in the case that I would have needed that, I could have just shown up to the hospital and say, "Hey, I'm a patient. I'm here. I'm in labor," without them knowing that it was really a home birth transfer. I did not tell my OB that I was actually planning a home birth. I think she would have been pretty upset. Maybe she would have fired me. I don't know. But the difference in care that I received from the OB and from the midwife was really, really interesting. So it seemed like at my OB appointments, there was a lot of focus on like different tests and procedures and my weight. And further down, they wanted to do lots of cervical checks, which I all declined. And at the same time, when I talked to my midwife, the focus was a lot more on nutrition, on exercise. She was asking me, "What do you do to prepare for your VBAC?" Lots of education on birth, and there were lots of books that she suggested for me to read. I also started seeing a chiropractor pretty early in the pregnancy. I was doing my homework. I was doing my spinning babies exercises. I was so focused on doing everything I could to have the birth that I had envisioned. At some point, my midwife had me do some extra blood draw. She wanted to make sure that my iron levels were okay for the home birth, and they were actually slightly lower than they were supposed to be. So she put me on like an iron supplement for a couple of weeks. And that was, for example, something that the OB never like asked about or really cared about. At some point, I was a little bit nervous about the position of my baby. It almost felt like he was laying sideways and I couldn't really tell. I brought it up to the OB and she was like, "Yeah, let's get in the ultrasound machine. Let's take a look." She was trying to feel, but she couldn't really tell. And everything was good. He was head down. Well, I didn't know he was a he because we did not find out the gender, but baby was head down. Everything was okay. And I brought up the same thing to the midwife. And it was so funny because she did not need an ultrasound. She just like felt and she felt really good. She's like, "Yeah, I know. I feel all of the different body parts here, heads down, you're good." And of course, she was right. It was just so interesting to see how different things were approached by the two providers. I also hired a doula and I made sure she was VBAC Link certified, which was really exciting. So she was familiar with the podcast that I was, of course, also listening to at the time to prepare for my VBAC. At some point, I had a situation with my OB that made me pretty uncomfortable. It was time for the GBS testing, and I had done my research and I made an informed decision and I let her know that I was declining the test. And she was not happy to hear it. And she kept saying, "Well, if your baby dies," and she kept saying that multiple times. It was like, "If your baby dies." And I was like, "This is so unprofessional to say it like that." I
Oh my
totally
gosh,
understand that
like I
she
can't
needs
even
to.
believe.
Yeah, isn't that horrible?
That's
And I get that
horrible.
she, I understand she needs to educate me on the risks that come with declining certain tests. But that was just not a proper way to communicate that.
Yeah, find
So
another
that
way. Find another
situation,
way.
So that situation really confirmed for me home birth was the way to go. Like, I did not want to have anything to do with this hospital or this OB anymore at that point. So I was fully committed to the home birth, was planning on it. And I continued my OB visits more just to check a box. At 37 weeks, my midwife brought over the birthing pool and some supplies, and I gathered everything that I needed. She had sent me a list of all the different supplies that we needed to buy and gather. And so I started getting all that. I created a beautiful birthing space for myself in our bedroom. I had my affirmations up. They were taped to my mirror in the bathroom as daily reminders. I had them hung up in the bedroom with some twinkle lights. I had the picture of the opening flower and everything was ready. I had my Spotify playlist ready and I was so excited for baby to come here. Then at 39 weeks and one day, it was early in the morning, like maybe 6:30 a.m. I was laying in bed and our toddler had climbed into bed with me, and I felt a little pop and I was like, that was weird, but didn't really think much of it because pregnancy is weird and our bodies do all kinds of weird things that we can't explain when we're pregnant. So I didn't think much of it, went back to sleep. Then an hour later, I got up to go to the bathroom and I sit down on the toilet and like water is gushing out. And I was like, shoot, what is going on? I'm not peeing, like what's happening? And I just realized, no, my water broke. I wasn't expecting it at that point because you hear about a lot of women going into 40, 41 weeks, 42 weeks, especially with their first pregnancy, that they're going into natural labor. So I was so surprised that it happened at 39 weeks and a day. I was feeling a tiny little bit crampy, but definitely did not have any contractions. I texted my husband. And I was like, oh my gosh, my water broke. And he was out for a workout, so he rushed home. And then I also texted my doula and my midwife just to let them know what was going on. But then the whole day was really uneventful. So I was kind of ready, waiting for labor to start, and it just didn't. I went on a lot of walks. I tried some curb walking, bounced on the yoga ball. I ended up getting a last minute appointment with my chiropractor for a quick adjustment. I really spent all day just trying to get labor started. I took some naps. I also tried using the breast pump for some stimulation to get things going. And I got some tiny little contractions. At that time, I thought they were contractions, but now that I know what contractions actually feel like, I realized that was not really the case. So I got some tiny low contractions going, but then they fizzled out again. And the midwife stopped by a few times to check on me and baby. And she had me take my temperature every 4 hours and text it to her just to make sure I wasn't running a fever. Baby was moving normal and she wasn't overly concerned. She ensured me that my body was probably just waiting until nighttime when my toddler is in bed. I'm relaxed and just, yeah, for things to start then. It was kind of weird because I was leaking amniotic fluid all day. So I tried to stay super hydrated and replenish all that water that I was losing. I went to bed and thought, okay, this is it. You know, we're going to have a baby maybe early in the morning. Labor is going to start and nothing happened. So I woke up really early and really disappointed that nothing had happened. And my midwife had sent me some information on PROMs, premature rupture of membranes, just to make sure I was making an informed decision. She always gave me the option to go to the hospital. She said I could go in, you know, the evening of when my water broke. She said I could wait until the next day and just do whatever I felt comfortable with. But she wanted me to be aware of the dangers with having a long time of broken waters. She also had sent me a recipe to the midwife's brew. So that was something we talked about to get labor started. And she said, something to consider for the next day if you don't have your baby overnight. So my husband went out and he bought the ingredients just in case. It was castor oil, almond butter, apricot nectar, and champagne. And it was absolutely disgusting. And it actually ruined almond butter for me for at least like 2 to 3 years. I could not have it anymore. It was so gross.
Oh my gosh. That is so like funny. The worst That's thing. Funny.
So I took it around 10 a.m. in the morning. At that point, my water had been broken for over 24 hours. And then I laid down for a nap, and maybe 2 hours later, I started feeling some contractions. They were coming in. I was just laying in bed, breathing through them, listening to my hypnobirthing affirmations and some relaxing music. And my husband was actually taking a nap at that time with our son. At some point, things were getting pretty intense, and I texted my doula and my midwife, and just I was trying to time contractions, but it was also kind of difficult. They both came over around 2 p.m. and realized pretty quickly that labor was going. So they needed to fill that pool because that actually takes a while, which was not something I was even thinking about. So they quickly got the birthing pool filled. And then once I got in the water, it was such a difference. At that point, I had some really, really heavy contractions. And I think I got in there around 3 p.m. And it was such a night and day difference. My doula was awesome. She was rubbing my back. She was giving me cold washcloths in my neck. And she was super helpful. So I was laboring in the tub. At some point, I needed to get out to go to the bathroom. And as soon as I got out, I instantly regretted that decision because it was so horrible and the contractions were feeling so much stronger when I was not in the water. My husband was still sleeping at that point, and I was like, okay, is somebody going to wake him up before a baby comes? But I also really lost track of time of how long I even was in the pool. So they did wake up at some point, and it was really funny because when he laid down for a nap, it was just me laboring in bed by myself. And they woke up from the nap, and I was in full active labor in the birthing pool with the doula and the midwife there, full action going on. And he was just like, whoa, what's happening? But yeah, it was really, and he jumped right into action and helping me out and massaging and all that good stuff. And it was really sweet because my son kept bringing toys. He was a little over 2 years and 3 months at that point. And he kept bringing over toys and he was playing right next to the pool and he was checking on me. And it was just really sweet and really special to have him there. Our dog was also walking around the pool and was really interested in what's going on. And I really lost track of time of how long I even was in the pool. At some point, I felt some really, really intense pressure, and it was almost like my body was pushing on its own without me really actively doing anything. And I had heard of fetal ejection reflex, but I didn't realize that that's what was going on. I didn't realize baby was already coming. And my midwife kind of just looked at me and she's like, feeling a little pushy, huh? And I was like, yeah, I guess that's what's going on. So it all happened really quickly. My husband got our son situated downstairs because we wanted him to be there, but we didn't want him to be there right as baby was born. We thought that may have been a little bit, would have been a little too much for him. So we got him situated downstairs. And yeah, things happened really quickly. And all of a sudden, his head was out. And it was really fun because we got to feel his hair. And I did not have another contraction for a minute, which was weird because his head was out, it was underwater, and it felt like a really, really long time between contractions. But then he was out with the next one, and my midwife caught him, and he came right to my chest. And my husband got to announce that he was a boy, which I knew all along. We didn't find out his gender, but I just knew he was going to be a boy. My pregnancy was just so similar. That I was like, there's no way he's not a boy. But yeah, he was born a little after 4 p.m. So, really, just 6 hours from when I had the midwife's brew. So, that really worked for me. And of course, I cried tears of joy. The amount of emotions I was feeling was just absolutely incredible. The rush of endorphins. I felt so empowered and so strong in that moment, like literally the strongest person in the world. It was awesome. We brought my son up and he got to meet his baby brother within minutes of his birth, which was so special and such an amazing experience. And then once we got settled in bed, I got to take a shower. I got to eat pasta in my bed and then also safely co-sleep with my baby in my own bed in my own home, which was just the complete opposite of that hospital C-section experience. So, yeah, the home birth experience was really healing for me in a way. It gave me closure from my C-section experience. I think because I had the C-section, I just knew what I absolutely did not want. And I think that really helped me fight and prepare for my home birth experience. I still had to call my OB and cancel my 40-week appointment, which was probably one of the weirdest phone calls I've ever had to make because I was like, yeah, I need to cancel my appointment because my baby's actually here. And they were like, wait, where was your baby born? We have no records of this. So I was like, yeah, he was born at home. And they're like, you need to get him checked out. What do you mean he was
You're
born at
like,
home? I was like, no, it's all good. It's like, no, we had
accident.
a professional there. It's all good. Don't worry about it. Just like, let's not talk about it anymore.
I love that so much. Okay, I want to talk about a couple of things, or I mean, maybe just comment. Like, when you were talking about your C-section and how you felt guilty about how maybe he was having, trouble nursing or whatever, and you were feeling guilty that maybe he had been taken too early, or he wasn't ready to be born yet and stuff. Like, I felt that so hard with my C-section baby, and I just wanted to like validate, because I feel like that is not an uncommon thing. I feel like a lot of us have that concern when we have either a scheduled C-section or an induction that results in a C-section, or maybe even an induction that results in a vaginal birth, right? You can look back at it and feel like maybe I made the wrong choice, or maybe he was taken too early, or things like that. And I just wanted to like validate that and know that I like see you and I hear you and I feel you and everybody, right? Not just you, but everybody. And that try not to be too hard on yourself. Not speaking just to you, but like everybody, right? Try not to be too hard on yourself, because you are making the best decisions that you could with the information that you had available to you at the time. So give yourself some grace, give yourself some love. I think that's really important as we navigate our pregnancies and birth after having an unwanted C-section or an unwanted birth experience, that just giving ourselves that grace is really, really important part of it. I did want to talk about the difference in care. You highlighted this a few things in your episode about the difference in care between a hospital OB and having a midwife, or especially a home birth midwife, right? In the hospital, you're still going to see a little bit of similarities between midwifery and OBs, although midwifery care in a hospital is a lot more hands-on and a lot more personal and a lot more trusting, generally speaking, right, of the birth process. But I just was thinking this morning about a post. There was a post in, it wasn't even a VBAC group, it was just a local moms group in my community. And this woman was talking about how it was her first baby and she hasn't had an ultrasound or seen the baby in 10 weeks, or since 10 weeks. Sorry, she had a 10-week scan and she hadn't seen the baby since then. She wasn't 20 weeks pregnant yet, but she was like, I don't know, almost. And she was like, I'm just wondering if this is normal. Every time I have an appointment with my OB, I only see him for 2 minutes and I don't feel like this is normal. I have some concerns, but I'm not being able to ask questions and things like that. And it made me sad. It made me sad for this parent not being cared for in the way that she needs to be. And it also made me sad because her experience is not that uncommon. Like, I wanted to say, like, unfortunately, this is normal. You're not going to see your OB for more than a couple minutes per visit. You're not going to, have time to ask a lot of questions and get a lot of answers, because hospitals are busy and OBs are busy, and most of them don't have the time or intentionally make the time to give you that kind of attention. It's just how it is. Now, I say most of the time, because there are some OBs, like I saw briefly an OB for my third pregnancy and I love her, and she was always like 45 minutes late. Our appointments were always like 45 minutes late. Like, an appointment would be like at 1:45 and I wouldn't get in there till 2 o'clock, because she was giving everybody the attention that they needed. And a lot of people get frustrated because she was like an hour late for the visits, but I wasn't frustrated because I knew that she was giving other people the same attention that she gave to me, right? But that is so, so rare in a hospital setting. So I love that you highlighted that. I love that you talked about how your midwife took time to address your concerns, how she monitored your iron levels and gave you iron supplements, and your OB didn't. It wasn't even on his radar, right? Or her radar. I don't know if yours would be, it was a boy or girl. I can't remember. Their radar, right? And how your OB needed an ultrasound to confirm baby's position, but your midwife just palpated your belly. Because midwives are more hands-on. They're more intimately connected to the female body, to right. the baby, to the physiologic birth process.
Yeah. And she was more hands-on during the pregnancy, but then at the actual birth, she was very hands-off. She let me do my own thing. She wasn't like constantly in my space and interrupting my labor.
Right.
She would come in very quietly, very softly, and she would, you know, check on the baby and check on me. And if everything was good, she was back out the door and she let me labor in my own space and at my own pace, which was awesome.
Right. Well, I was going to talk about that next. Actually, I have a couple little notes. I've been keeping notes while you've been talking, because during your labor, you said you felt the fetal ejection reflex and your midwife is like, oh, feeling pushy, are we? And I know exactly what that looks like. Like, I'm not a midwife, but I am a doula I've been a doula and a birth photographer. And I know what it looks like when women's body is progressing. But in a hospital setting, what do? We connect you to monitors. We put an IV in you. We make sure we sit at a nurse's station and watch the monitor, and that's how we know how you're doing. We use ultrasounds to determine baby's position. We use data and numbers, and we look at data to decide how the parent and the baby are doing. But in midwifery care, especially out of hospital midwifery care, we use a completely different set of tools. We use observation. We're watching, we're listening, we're seeing, we're noticing the movements that are shifting, the sounds as they evolve and change. We're seeing the belly move. We're seeing, you know, all the different things. And it's a completely different approach, right? Like, you see, I know exactly what an unmedicated parent looks like as they're getting closer to transition. I know exactly the noises that change, what sounds are made, what different subtleties. You just learn these things when you actually just watch a laboring person and notice what is happening. But they don't do that in a hospital. And OB, nurses are not trained to do that. Probably nurses, because they're in the room a little bit more. But your OB, probably not going to show up until you start pushing. They don't know what those signs are. All they have is the data on the machines to see how you're doing. And I feel like, oh, I know what approach I prefer. Let's just say that. And it's no secret that I'm a big fan of home births, especially for VBAC, when the parent feels comfortable there. And I don't know. I just really love that. I really love, like, my appointments when I had my 3 VBACs at home. Every time I saw my midwife, we would chat for like an hour. And she did talk about nutrition. I had preeclampsia with my first, so my blood pressure was high. I was like, I don't want high blood pressure. So she like gave me all of these like nutritional things to do to help take care of my heart and help make sure that my blood pressure wasn't high. But then what would happen in the hospital? In the hospital, they wait until your blood pressure gets high and then they treat it, right? They treat it. They don't work on preventing it or making you healthier or things like that. And I just feel like there is such a big difference in care, and it's not for everybody. And that's not where everybody feels safe. But I wanted people to know that home birth midwives are very skilled. They are very hands-on throughout the pregnancy and oftentimes hands-off during the delivery, because we trust these bodies to do what they need to do. And sometimes they do need help, but also observing and watching can help us know when a little bit of extra help is needed. It's just such a fun little dance that can be done throughout pregnancy and labor. And it's a kind of like an art form as much as it is a medical side of things, right? Now that midwives are not like chicken dancing hippies that run around to your room with incense and pray for a safe delivery. They are skilled medical professionals that have high levels of training and care and can practice in very similar ways that you do see in a hospital setting, just without all the extra crap and interventions that are there. So obviously they can't do surgery, and depending on your state and where you live, there are different restrictions about what out-of-hospital midwives can and cannot do. But a lot of people are surprised to find out how much training and knowledge and skills and procedures that out-of-hospital midwife has access to. So I wanted to talk about that. So yeah, anyways, Gisa, do you want to say like give one piece of advice to anybody preparing for a VBAC, like right now, what would you tell anybody?
I think a lot of people, when they go to the doctor, they see their OB, they heavily rely on what they're telling them. They almost glorify the OB's advice in a way. And we got to remember that these doctors, they work for us. We don't work for them. So if we don't feel comfortable with what they're saying, we have the option to go somewhere else and to take our business somewhere else. The doctors work for us, we don't work for them. And it is never too late to switch your provider. I was kind of going back and forth whenever I was pregnant with my first, and I was very late into my pregnancy. And I kept thinking, what if I just find a provider that does breech births? In a way, I wish I had, but then you never know what actually would have happened. So it's, you know, it's hard to say how that would have changed my experience, and I could have still ended up with a C-section. But I could have changed my provider at 38 weeks if I had contacted somebody, but I was just so overwhelmed by the whole situation that I didn't. But I was so glad that when I wasn't feeling comfortable with my OB during my second pregnancy and with what she was saying, that I took the step to find somebody who was truly supportive and who was able to help me with the birth that I had envisioned.
Yes, I absolutely love that. I think that's great advice and make a very good point. Like, it's never too late to switch providers. And I think that the single most important thing that you can do to affect your birth outcome is to choose a provider that operates in the way that you want to birth just naturally. It's just what they do anyways. And that's going to, I don't know. I feel like if you do that, then that's like half the battle.
Yeah, 100%. And I know some people feel very comfortable at the hospital, and a lot of people are not good candidates for a home birth. When I told people that I was planning a home birth, I got a lot of people saying like, oh, are you sure? That's like so scary. And it's like, if that scares you, then you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
If you feel safer in a hospital, go ahead. There's nothing wrong with that. Go to the hospital, have your baby there if that's where you feel comfortable. For me, just the thought of having to fight for certain things while I'm in labor and very vulnerable wasn't something I wanted to do. I wanted to focus on laboring and birthing and just having that experience. I did not want to get into fights with OBs and nurses over whatever I could or could not do while at the hospital. That just did not sound like a good idea to me.
Yep, absolutely. I agree 100%. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And thanks for sharing your story with us. I'm super proud of you. You said after your baby was born, you felt like the strongest woman ever. And I agree. Like, you are the strongest woman ever, along with all the women that are listening right now. We are truly women of strength. And no matter how your birth outcome ends, you're strong, you're powerful. And I'm very grateful to each of you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.